Thank you very much, Anita. We are glad that you came among us, and we just hope that you have enjoyed your coming as much as we have enjoyed having you. I like you even better now than I did before, after I have learned that you are a Cornhusker from Nebraska. I was born out on those plains in Custer County, and that's where I started my wild drinking career at the age of 14. So I'm glad to know that you too are a Cornhusker. When I came into AA several years ago, it wasn't long until I heard about a Methodist preacher who was extremely interested in helping alcoholics and who was extremely interested in the disease of alcoholism. And since that time, I have heard Tom on many occasions, and I think I can say, and I know that many, many of you will agree with me, that he has a deeper and more profound understanding of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous than any non-alcoholic that I know. He does a wonderful work all the time. And when you go to his church, it looks like an AA meeting. And Tom is now known for his work among alcoholics, not only in Dallas, but of course statewide. But recently he has become well known nationally for his work with alcoholics, and we are mighty proud of him. Those of you that haven't heard him are going to have a treat. Those of you that have heard him know what's in store for you. I'm happy to give you the pastor of the Lover's Lane Methodist Church in Dallas, Reverend Tom Shipp.
Thank you very much, Anita, and friends. It's wonderful to be here this evening, believe me. The times have really changed. There was a time when you used to kind of sit around and fuss about going somewhere. Now, you travel so fast, you arrive and you can step out of the plane and listen to yourself coming. I've spoken in Maine and New Hampshire and Massachusetts today, and now back in Dallas. The other night a drunk called, and he apparently dialed the wrong number, and when I answered, he said, "Is this Fleetwood 7? 1861, and I said, "No, I'm sorry, this is Fleetwood 2-1861. He said, "Man, you done answered the wrong phone." It's wonderful to be here and see all of you. Now, if any of you have to leave, get up and walk out. Don't sneak out. I don't mind you leaving, but just don't sneak out, because, that reminds you of the old days. You know, I was talking to a young man that came into my office the other day, and I received a letter from him. He's getting ready to make a trip. In fact, it's the first time he's ever been away from home, and he came in to see his preacher before he left, and he said to me, "If I get away from home and I don't know who to turn to for help," he said, "where can I call or who can I call?" And I said, "Well, there's two things to always do. If you can't find a Methodist preacher, then call Alcoholic Anonymous." And he said, "Well, I don't drink." I said, "Well, that doesn't matter. They'll straighten out a lot of problems for you if you get the ticket." You perhaps heard the story, I told some of you this story perhaps, about the preacher, you know, that received a new appointment to a church, and he arrived there the first day, and like some of you people perhaps getting into Dallas for the first time, and he went out the next morning to see if they left a paper, and he found a dead animal on the porch, and so he called the city authorities and said, "I'd like for you to come down, I've got a dead animal on my porch, I'd like for you to move him." And the fellow said, "Well, what kind is it?" He said, "Well, it's a dead mule." And he said, "I'd like for you to come get him." He said, "Well, aren't you a preacher?" He said, "Yes." "Well," he said, "aren't you used to taking care of the dead?" He said, "You're right, but I thought it my duty to notify the closest of kin." Oh, you know, things have really changed. I was coming back on the plane this afternoon. You know, there was a time when a man had to sneak his bottle on these planes, but now, you know, they come around and serve you. And the fellow came around, you know, and I was sitting on one side of the aisle. This man was sitting on the other side. They came by and they served him his drink. And she asked me what I wanted, and I kind of said quietly, "I'd like to have some tomato juice." And when it came over, he looked at me, and this fellow looked across the aisle and said, "What is that?" I said, "Why, don't you know what that is? That's a Bloody Mary." But, you know, I started writing my speech, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I don't think you'd be interested." He said, "What's your business?" "Oh," I said, "not much of anything. After all, I didn't want to ruin his trip." You know, I thought, sure, the guy's going to ask me what I'm going to do tonight. You know, I was in New York this week, and I ended up after about the second day, and boy, I'm telling you, my arm hurt, I ached all over, and you know, I used to see these New Yorkers come out of those revolving doors up there, and man, they'd take off down the street like a bullet, you know, and I never could figure out how they got such a head start, until after about the second day, and I was worn out, so I began to catch on to their tricks, you know. They stand on the other side of the door until you come in on the opposite side and you give them a push and they go out the other way. So after about the second day, I went in on this side and the old boy came in on the other side and I stood there and looked at him. I said, "Boy, you're going to push me or I'm going to push you?" You know, I couldn't help but think about that. Really? You know, if this AA program's going to work for you and if any program's going to work for you in life, you can't wait for the other man to push you through the door. You can't go through life on the other man's push. You know, you've got to do it yourself. Nothing worked for us. We try to find some shortcuts. We try to find an easy way out. But usually it ends up the wrong. And so one of the real difficult problems that's going to face us as we try to handle the problems that are before us is realizing the one fact, and that is that you've got to make up your mind that you've got to go through life on your own push. And if you wait for the other man to get you through life, you're likely going to end up not making it. Another very interesting thing that happens, you know, there's something about life that is different than anything else. You know, in most anything else, you can always find a relief or someone to substitute for you or someone to take your place. I was watching the Yankees play ball this week, and in about the sixth inning, they got into trouble. The manager went out and talked to the pitcher for a while, and then he called in a relief pitcher, and I thought to myself, you know, this is interesting for a ball game. When you get into trouble, you can call someone in and let them help get you out, but in life you can't do this, you know. In life, when you're out there pitching the game, you might feel like, well, I'd like for someone to come in and substitute for me and get me out of this tight, but it doesn't work that way. Because there's no way in the world that anyone can substitute for what you have to do in life. But it's a wonderful thing to know that there's someone that's on the side, or there's someone on the team with you. And I think that's the wonderful thing about AA. That this is a program, not where you go in and substitute for a man. You do not go in and carry a man's load. You do not go in and take him out of the game. You do not go in and put him on the sideline. But you go in and you give him all the support that you have, and you let him know that you're back of him. And perhaps this is the reason why many of individuals come out winners today instead of losers. And then another wonderful thing that I thought about not very long ago that maybe some of you have thought about yourself. And that is, you know, it's the hard things in life that really makes life wonderful. It's the difficult things in life that really make you what you are. I sometimes think that's the reason why you're such a grand bunch of people. Because of what you've been through, because of what you've experienced. And this is what's made you what you really are. This is why you can feel so deeply. This is why you can share. This is why you can give. This is why you can understand. And without this, I doubt if you would ever be the individuals that you really are. You know, the wonderful thing about life is this, that I used to think that what a man really needed to climb a hill was a smooth path. One day we were mountain climbing, and I said to the fellow that was climbing the mountain, I said, "Boy, listen, this would be easy if it weren't for the rocks that are in the path." And the old boy that was guiding us said, "Brother, you'd better be thankful for those stones in this path." He said, "If it weren't for the rocks, you'd never reach the top of this hill. Have you ever tried to walk up a hill where the path was smooth and find out how difficult it is? Have you ever tried to walk where everything is just as smooth as it possibly can be and find out how tired you are when you reach your destination?" And so instead of perhaps cursing the stones along the pathway of life, it might be well for us to be grateful for them, because they may cause us to reach heights that we otherwise would never reach in our living or in our life. But you know, so often we fight things of life, and I'm grateful to you for your program, because it's helped you to kind of lean back, you know, and take it easy. I was going to Denver last week, and, you know, there was a fellow sitting on the plane, and honest to goodness, he tried to hold that plane up all the way up there. And I said to him after a while, I said, "Man, you're just going to wear yourself out." He said, "I know it, but I gotta carry this thing." And I said, "Brother, you got more strength than I have." And honest to goodness, his hands were white. He was gripping it so tight. You know, one of the things I found out when I was playing baseball for Branch Rickey, one of the first things when he talked to us, he said, "Fellas, if you're ever going to make a great baseball player, and if you're ever going to do anything, you've got to learn to give with the ball." He said, "Don't be afraid of it. Don't go out and push against it." He said, "Go out and give with the ball, and you'll find how easy it is to catch it." And yet how many of us, when we go out in life and we want to catch something, we want to get a hold of it, and we go out and meet it in this direction, whereby if you'll give back a little bit, you'll be surprised how it'll come right to you. Well, this is something that happens to many of us. You know, if you want to chip life away, one of the best ways to do it is to resist it. And if you want life to wear you away and grind you away, then then push against it. Have you ever watched a tree ride the wind out? The tree that stands sturdy against the wind will be broken. Someone was saying to me this week in New York, he said, you know, I want to worry about the Empire State Building. He says it gives perhaps 6 to 7 inches, and in its greatest it can give up to, I believe, almost 10 inches. He said this is the only reason why it can stand against the wind, is because it has the ability to give. And you know one of the reasons why so many people fail to make this program? It's because they keep fighting it instead of giving and relaxing and letting it become a part of their very life. And so I would hope that each one of you, as you began to get this program, as wonderful it is, do not fight it, accept it, and you'll be surprised what it will do for you, as it will give you life itself. And another very wonderful thing that I was thinking of the other day, and some of you have heard me say this before, you know, it all depends on what you're looking for as to what you see. You know, it's the strangest thing. I was kidding my wife on this trip. I said, honey, it's surprising how you and I never see the same things when we walk down the street. You know, it's surprising how she can always see a particular type of hat. I never see them. But you know, I counted 11 golf courses today from the airplane. It all depends on what you're looking for, you know. If you own an Oldsmobile, and that's the right kind of car, you know. If you own an Oldsmobile, it's surprising how many Oldsmobiles you see on the street. But if you get in a Dodge or something like that, you never noticed them before, but it's surprising after you get one how you begin to notice them on the street. It all depends on what you're looking for. And I was in Tyler, and I'd like to share this with some of you a while back. And I was walking around the store while my daughter was buying some sunglasses. And the interesting thing that happened was a lady came up to me and said, may I help you? And I said, no, thank you. I'm just looking. And she said, that's too bad. I was in hopes you wanted something. And I said, well, I may look around and I may find something that I want. And she said, well, if you do, you likely won't like it and you'd want to bring it back tomorrow. And I said, well, I don't understand. She said, well, you know, I've watched a lot of people come and go. I've watched a lot of people come in this store, and if they just come in to kill time, if they just come in because they're bored with their husband or they're worn out with their children and they're just here looking, usually if they buy something, they don't usually want it. They're usually unhappy with it. But you know, if they come in here looking for something, they usually find it. And I can usually help them find it. You know, I came back to Dallas and I was walking down the church hall and I met an old boy out there and I said to him, I said, may I help you? And he said, no, I'm just looking. And you know, I went in the pulpit on Sunday morning and I looked out over my congregation and I couldn't help but just think, I wondered how many of them were there just looking or if they were there really wanting something, you know? And I can't help but think that tonight. I just wonder whether you're here to really look for something because you want it, or are you here just looking? Now, if you're here just looking, this likely will be one of the most disappointing conferences that you've ever had. But if you're here because you want something, if you're here because you're looking for something, then you'll likely walk away with your hearts filled and with something that will carry you through the days that are ahead, with friendships renewed and spirits lifted and hearts filled and souls given strength and courage. You know, I often wonder how Jesus must feel if he walk in my congregation on Sunday morning and would walk up to an individual and say to him, may I help you? And the person just say to him, no, I'm just looking. He might say to him, you know, I was in hopes that you were here because you wanted something. And I would hope that each one of you are at this convention this time, Because you want something. You want something that you've never had before. You want something that you've lost. You want to find something that you've never had. And if you really want it, you'll find it here. Because I know some of the people that are here that can help you to find it. Most of all, I know the spirit of AA. The greatest thing I know about it is what it has to say and what it has to offer. And if you really want it, you can find it. But if you want to find some heels here, you can find them. If you want to find some hypocrites here, you can find them the same as you can in my church. You know, by the way, I hadn't planned to say this, you know. In fact, I wish I hadn't thought of it. In fact, a fella came to my mind, and I just wished he hadn't, because he just kind of spoiled this, you know. He came up to me one day, and he said, you know, I'd like to go to church, but there's a blooming many hypocrites in the church. And I said, sure enough. Yeah, and I said, well, what do you mean by a hypocrite? He said, well, it's the guy that appears to be better than what he really is. And I said, sure enough. I said, if that's what it is, then I'd like to be that kind of a person. You know, you don't have to be in AA to find it. You don't have to be in a church. All you have to do is go out and stand in front of this hotel. And you'll see some people driving up in some cars, appearing better than what they really are. You'll see them wearing some clothes and some mink stole. No, they don't wear them here. That's up in New York. You know, appearing to be better than what they really are. But you know, I've got a feeling that if you don't appear to be better than what you really are, I doubt if you'll ever become better. And if you don't have the desire and the willingness to want to be with a group that is better than you are, I doubt if you'll ever become better. You know, the way you become a great golfer is not by playing with guys that are sorrier than you are, but you play with golfers that are greater than you are, better than you are. And the only way that your life is going to be lifted to a higher tone is not as you drift to a lower crowd, but as you drift to a crowd that is higher than you are and perhaps living a bit better and doing a bit better than you are, and out of it will come something that will be wonderful. Oh, I know what he meant. I really do. What he really meant was the guy that is in here so that he can take advantage of the next person tomorrow, who wants to be with this group today so that he can take advantage of the guy tomorrow. Well, now you and I would take odds with this too, and we would hate to see it happen. But I do not believe that that is the characteristic of AA nor the characteristic of this group either. And so I would hope that tonight you would stretch yourself a bit. I would hope that as you reach these 12 steps, that you'd make them a little bit harder than what they were for you the last time, because I know if you have to stretch a bit tonight, you'll be a bit taller tomorrow in your spirit and in your life. And then, gee whiz, it's 5 minutes after 11. Golly, I thought I'd really gone haywire. You know, I came back to church one time after being up to Washington. I really felt like a fool on Sunday morning, you know. I went over bright and early. I went to the church, and I thought, gee, I'm awfully sleepy. And I went over to church, and no janitors, no ushers, no organists, no choir. I went out, and I said, gee, things couldn't have gone to the dogs this quick. Pretty soon I started to walk out after sitting there for a while, and I said to the janitor, I said, boy, where you been all morning? He said, where have I been all morning? Gee, it's just 7 o'clock. So that's one thing that we should do, is to be sure that you have the right standard to set your watch by, you know, because that makes a great difference. Because you may get all mixed up if you don't. And whatever you are, there's a standard for time. And just as there's a standard for time, there's always a standard for life. And just as there's a standard to meet, and without this standard, there's no way you can judge your life. And just as every person in AA has to have a standard, so does every person in life have to have one. And I think that AA has perhaps set up the finest standard and the finest measure that I've ever known. I said this to a group of ministers and doctors and social workers this morning in Maine. And I said to them, as they questioned me over and over again about you and your organization, how dubious people still are, how much more they think they know than you do. And you know, I just hope that when you run into this kind of person, you'll muster up enough courage to try to just remain humble. You know, I almost got mad this morning and I said, no, my AA friends wouldn't want me to do that. You know, I like to fight for you once in a while, but you don't get your point over that way. And so I just want to close then with this, with a story that I told last week. Don't lose what you have in AA. Don't ever lose its heart. Don't ever lose its spirit. Don't ever become too professional. And those of you that are in AA, remember this as long as you live. You may know what's right for you, but don't try to tell the next fellow what's right or how to do it. Help him to find his own way. Don't ever try to tell him how he's swinging the bat wrong. And Branch Rickey taught me this one time. When I said to him after we'd been in spring practice for a while, I said, what am I doing wrong? He said, I don't care what you're doing wrong. All I'm interested in is trying to teach you and show you the right way to do it. So don't fuss with people about the things they do wrong. Don't get upset about it, because we have a few ourselves. And be careful, or else you're going to push right out of your organization what you'd like to keep. And don't ever lose sight of the man who's fighting down the street. And don't ever get too good to set up with a drunk. Don't ever get too high in your organization to be concerned about the guy who needs you to do a bit of babysitting with him. Because he may be sitting where you are tonight because someone had heart enough to sit with him last night. And I'm concerned that a guy doesn't have to hit complete bottom before he can be helped. And if you can help him as he goes down this long hill before he hits bottom, you've done a great deal for him. And when someone calls up and asks you for help, be careful what you say to him over the phone, because you may close the door that'll keep him from ever coming in. I would hope that AA would never ask the question, do you want to get sober? Go see if he wants to get sober, but don't ask him that. Go see for yourself. The last thing I'd ever ask a man if he ever called me, do you want to get sober? Or if a family calls me and says, I got someone that needs some help tonight, the last thing that I want to ask him is, does he want to get sober? Because I may not be able to help the alcoholic, but I can certainly help this person. And I'd rather go see if he wants to, and then I can be sure, because he may not know himself, you see. Some of you know what I mean, because you've been there yourself, and some of you are here tonight, not because you decided to stay sober or to get sober, but because someone stayed with you and stayed after you until finally you caught on. And so I close then with this little story. It was late one night. In fact, it was 2:30 in the morning, and the telephone rang. And the doctor answered the phone, and it was from a hospital some 60 miles away. The superintendent of the hospital said to the doctor, he said, you're the only man within a radius of 60 miles that can save the life of a young lad that's been brought to our hospital. We can keep him alive an hour and a half if you can make it. And he said, I'll be there. He hurriedly dressed himself. He rushed down, jumped in his car, and took off for the hospital, breaking all the speed limits, driving as safely as possible. Finally, he arrived at a stop sign or a stoplight where he had to stop for just a moment. Impatiently, he wanted to move, when all at once the door on the right opened and a man slipped in. He had a brown cap pulled over his face. He had on a suede jacket, blue slacks. and in his hand he carried a pistol. He shoved it into the man's side and he said, "Drive." The man tried to tell him what he was on and what kind of a trip he was on, and he said, "Shut up and drive." And the man drove until he reached a vacant spot in the area, and then it was the man said, "Stop." And again, even at the risk of his life, he tried to tell him the urgent trip that he was on, and a boy's life was at stake. And the man said, "Shut up, I'm not interested in what you're doing, get out." He got out and the doctor watched him drive away. He went to a nearby house. They did not have an automobile of their own. He called a cab. The cab rushed him to the hospital as quickly as possible. He rushed up the stairs and he rushed through the door. The superintendent met him and looked at him and he said, "Where have you been?" He said, "It's too late. The boy has just died." The man told him what had happened and he said, "Well, you know, the father's in the waiting room. I'd like for you to tell him what had happened. I think it'd make him feel better toward you and toward the hospital and toward what he's having to face." He went into the room where the man was sitting, and here sat a man with a cap pulled over his head, a brown cap. He had taken it off and he was wringing it in his hand. He wore a suede jacket. He wore a pair of blue slacks. The only man in the world that could have saved the life of his son. He pushed him out. The only tragedy that can happen here tonight is that the only program that can save your life, you may push it out. And may God give you the strength not to do this. And may you become like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth its fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind driveth away. Surely the ungodly shall perish, but the righteous shall stand forever. Let not your hearts be troubled, and neither let them be afraid. If God be for you, who can be against you? Peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your hearts be troubled, and neither let it be afraid, because you have a program that will keep you both in crises and in times of good fortune. Thank you, and God bless you for being such a great group. Amen.
About his drinking problem and how he was able to control it through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You all know him and we love him, and I know he's going to tell me again how he stays sober. Vern.
You'll notice that Mr. Decker, always gone, I'd say it anyway, he now calls us ladies and gentlemen. How many times I've been in his place, I couldn't count. But I can sincerely say that thank God for Mr. Decker. My name is Vern. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and by following this program, and by the grace of God, I haven't had a drink since the 28th day of December of 1954. Now, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous a long time, and my talk was more or less based on that. Of what happened to me in my first 10 years in AA and what has happened to me in the last approximately five. And I'm going to call it submission versus surrender. And in my case, that's exactly what happened to me. Something like the story of an old drunk up in the hills in northwestern Arkansas. He was in horrible shape. He knew he had to get into something. He had to do something about this drinking problem. It was terrible. And he made his way, hitchhiked, going down a little rock and got there and got to walking around. He just knew he had to get with something, join something. So he saw a sign and it said, Catholic Church. He went on in. He said, I want to join here. Priest. Priest said, what, are you Catholic? And he said, no, I'm not Catholic. He said, well, you can't just come in and join like this. And so the fellow went away, and he went a couple blocks down the street. He saw another sign that said Masonic Lodge upstairs. And he went up this lodge, and two men sitting at the desk. He thought he'd be a little smarter this time. And he said, listen, he said, I'm a Catholic, and I want to join here. They said, Catholic, you can't join here. And he said, well, I'm a son of a bitch. He said, oh, you want to join here? You're down the street two blocks. Well, in my case, for 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew I wanted to join something. I knew I was the right place. Because my life had got to the point where it was certainly unmanageable and wrecked. And so, to cut a long story short, a girl named Esther found me. And I came into AA when there was no AA in Dallas. And during this period of approximately 10 years, I worked hard in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not only 12-step work. I did that because I like to. I like to be with people like myself. But also my social life, what I had, was spent with members of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was my whole life. I just devoted my entire life to AA. I read everything I could possibly read about AA, about this spiritual side of the program, which I couldn't even get a glimpse of. And at times I would stay sober. Oh, I used to look on it and call it respectable lengths of sobriety, such as 6 months, a year, 18 months, 22 months, 23 and a half months. Never did I make 2 years. Many a first birthday I had. And all the time, deep down in my heart, I always had the feeling that someplace down the road, under certain conditions, something will probably happen to me, and I'll probably end up drunk, and not only disgrace myself, but I'll let all these wonderful people down. And inevitably, that's what always happened. And then in 1954, or 1953, it started. And it lasted all of 53 and most of 54, to the extent that I ended up in Mr. Decker's Iron Hotel. I don't remember getting in it. But after being there for 2 days, he took me himself personally. There's men and women in this room that know this to be true. And took me in an ambulance out to Harry Hines Boulevard, the Parkland Psychopathic Ward. I don't remember getting there. I went back 3 months later with Mr. Decker and W.O. over here, and he showed me my chart. And on the chart, it reads on top, DOA, dead on arrival. And then there's a line drawn through it, and underneath is written comatose and cyanotic. And I found out later that Mr. Decker told this doctor who pronounced me dead to go to work on him anyway. He's a good friend of mine. A lousy, stinking drunk. He's a good friend of mine. I found this out 3 months later. What happened is when I came to 2 days later, I found out what the sign in every club room in America really means, but by the grace of God, that's what happened to me. And I knew when I came to that my drinking is over. Of course, I'll qualify that by saying one day at a time and living the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I found out that that sign meant a little bit different than what I used to think it meant. I used to think that by the grace of God meant that by the grace of God I'd be drunk like Joe Drokes. Or by the grace of God I'd be in a worse economic condition than so-and-so. Well, it means that too. But what it really means is grace is a gift. It's a Greek word. It's something that's given to us by God. And we only get it when God thinks we're ready to get it. So by submission versus surrender, I mean that for the first 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had submitted to the proposition of step one, that I could not drink, that I was powerless over alcohol. I had submitted, I certainly knew that my life was unmanageable, but I had never surrendered in my heart or in my soul. I had not given up. And when this happened to me and I had given up, then I received the grace of God. Needless to say, I haven't had a bit of trouble as far as drinking is concerned since. Oh, I've had lots of troubles, but they have not kept me drunk. There's a great hue and cry today on the part of some people about those who seek the benefits from God. I'd like to know where in the name of heaven a bewildered and defeated person is going to go for help if he desperately needs help and he doesn't go to God. Where else could we go? Of course he's concerned about himself. He can't help it. He ought to be concerned about himself. He must be, if he is ever going to be made useful to other people. But later on, he must also grow up and stop just asking God and ask God to use him. Stop asking God what to do and begin to try and find out what God wants us to do. In his will is our peace. To me, AA is one of the great signs of spiritual awakening in our times. It is experimental in nature and certainly not dogmatic. But none can doubt that God is what has made AA what it is today. What inspires it? What keeps it going? What it is that perfectly intangible but absolutely unmistakable spirit that we felt again and again ever since we've come here. In my case, my first 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, I could not make a personal contact with God. And then when this crisis in my life came about, it's been very easy for me to make a personal contact with God. I've seen men and women from all over America come to Alcoholics Anonymous and have done that in their first 30 days. And I've seen it take 6 months, 2 years, 3 years, and in my case, 10 years. So to anybody here today that is new in Alcoholics Anonymous and having trouble with the so-called spiritual side of this program, you can sincerely take it from me that if you religiously come to Alcoholics Anonymous and try to practice these principles in your daily affairs, that eventually this peace will come to you. I don't have to tell you that Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life, let alone my sanity. Before coming to AA, I had been behind bars for 32 months of my life at one continuous stretch in a state institution. Not for any felony, but for just drinking. That was back in the days when there was no segregation. There was nothing called alcoholism. I was a dipsomaniac. I was treated as an insane person, and really and truly believed that I was. And many of the insane person or mentally ill person that I'd seen come in a lock belt, and in 6 months or a year go home, and I stayed. And I never could figure out why. Life was futile. Life was dark. I had lost a woman, a wife, and 2 sons. I never had a visitor in 32 months, and I never had a letter. Not one. I was 900 miles from where I had started out. When I say life was futile and life was dark, was because I knew nothing except the philosophy that I am master of my ship and captain of my ship and master of my soul. And I had found out that I was neither. And that is the utmost feeling of futility. So when I got out there and first came into Alcoholics Anonymous and met Esther, and she started to talk to me about this God business as I looked at it in those days, it was very repulsive to me. And it was very hard for me and very difficult. But slowly through the years, I came to accept those things. Until in 1954, I was converted. By converted, I'm not speaking of religion. Religion is only a man's personal relationship between himself and God. And that's what I mean by conversion. And in everybody, there's 4 things that happen to them. Conversion, prayer, acceptance, and wisdom. All these things we acquire by our group therapy, by associating with other people, just like ourselves in AA. Through AA, I've learned what they meant by true century, first century Christianity, of love thy neighbor as thyself. There's nothing new about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just the old things that have been going on for 2,000 years that the church has given us, and things that have been going on as long as medicine, that medicine has given us. But they're streamlined, put together, and carried from one person to another in a language that the other person can understand. In other words, we're nothing but agents. We're messengers. We're apostles, so to speak. We're certainly missionaries of God's in helping other people. I'm not a preacher. I don't know anything about preaching. My little talk is just about the things that have helped me. There's a prayer that I have practiced for 4 years, and I know most of you read it. It's AA all the way through, and it's been written for almost 1,200 years. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant me that I may seek rather to comfort, that be comforted, and to understand and to be understood, to love more than to be loved. For it is in giving that one receives. It is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgotten. And it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. We have a saying in Alcoholics Anonymous that to drink is to die. And I surely and truly believe that. Because for me to drink, I am dead. I have lost all spiritual concepts. I've lost my personal respect. Any little dignity that I have as a man, and that's the only thing that differentiates from an animal, is our dignity, our power of reasoning, and our souls. I couldn't talk like this for 10 years in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know it. I made talks all over Texas and adjoining states and many farther states than that. And for years I went around talking about Alcoholics Anonymous being a sickness, an illness. And then after I'd be all through with a talk and driving back to Dallas late at night by myself, I'd get to thinking, well, where am I really sick? And I never could figure it out. I knew I wasn't sick physically. I could pass a very strenuous physical examination. I knew I was not sick mentally. I'd been in a mental institution and worked over by psychiatrists for almost 3 years and other psychopathic hospitals and mental institutions. I even had gone so far as I had papers to prove that I'm mentally sane. Now, if I'm not sick mentally and I'm not sick physically, I never could figure out where I was sick. And I never knew until I read a little book called The Third Strike, written by a guy named Jerry Gray, who committed suicide in Brooklyn by cutting his throat in DTs in 1934. But before he died, he wrote this little book called The Third Strike, and in it he described and told what was the matter with him. And if that boy had lived one more year to 1935 and had found Alcoholics Anonymous, he'd been alive today. And he said he had a sickness of his soul. And I think that's it. And so for years, I had learned that if you're sick, you go to an MD physically, and I did that. And if you're sick mentally, you go to another MD, a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and I did that. And if you're sick in your soul, you go to another doctor of divinity. And I did that, and none of them worked. And it didn't work because I had never got to the point where I was ready to surrender. I could never forget self. I couldn't give up the sin of pride until I got to the point, I guess it's God's way, that I was so whittled down and so beat down that I surrendered in my soul. And then I accepted this grace that was all waiting for me all my life. Until today, I can say that I'm a happy person. Now, whether I'm successful or not remains to be seen. But I don't worry like I used to. And my problems, I have more than I used to. I have 4 little babies. 2, 4, and twin 6. Boy, when I got sober, I got good dry. I have an alcoholic wife that has helped me tremendously and I love with all my heart. The first 5 things in my life that I ever loved more than myself. Prior to this first 10 years in AA, I couldn't love anything but myself. But when I had surrendered, I began to love other things. Not only my own little family, but men and women. There's old Al sitting there. And W.O. and Ole and Icky. And I can go around the room, there's hundreds here. But I love everyone. My first 10 years in AA, I really didn't love them. Because I couldn't forget self. So through the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous and what this program stands for, it led me to God. And I can stand up here and talk about God from now on out because I feel that close to Him. And it gives me a wonderful feeling to know that someplace, under certain conditions, down the road, I won't get drunk again. Because I'm going to live this program today and practice these principles in my daily affairs the best of my ability. And I know that through folks like you and through the grace of the blessed Lord, I won't get drunk again. Thank you.
Thank you ever so much, Vern. Sitting in there listening to Vern just made me think of that first little meeting we had of all the meeting in Austin. And there's a lot of people here in this audience was there. But I don't believe that there was a man or woman there that ever had the wildest dream or imagination capable of thinking that there would be this many people attend a Friday afternoon meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. This crowd here is just an inspiration to look at. So that y'all can get a look at it, I'd like everybody from East Texas to stand up. Everybody from East Texas up. Everybody from South Texas stand up. Everybody from South Texas. Everything south. How about the valley? Anybody get up from the valley? They'll be here tomorrow from Harlingen, I'll bet you. How way West Texas now, let's all stand up. Let's see these West Texas boys. Isn't that wonderful? I still think the best AA talk I ever heard in all my life was at Doc B's birthday party. Never will forget it. Fifth birthday party in Palestine, out at the country club. The reason everybody forgot it, the damn gas heater blew up and everybody took their third step. Man, it just shook that thing like that. And I guess this new man did have a spiritual experience because, boy, he made a wonderful talk and it took him just 2 seconds. And he got up and he said, I don't know, but he said, I've been sober 52 days. And he looked all around and he says, whoever this man God is, he must be kind and love us drunk to ever sober up this many that's in this room and sat down. And boy, that's my true sentiments about this wonderful group here. The starting of your 14th conference. I know it's going to be a good one. Now, if any of you girls choose, I know that some of you bought new ones. I've been watching you hobbling around. Kick them all. I can't tell you to let out that bachelorette, but if you've got a gusset, open it up. And just make yourself at home because I know you're going to have a good time. You're bound to. Couldn't have anything else to come to a drunk meeting. We got a little surprise for you folks, and I know that if you enjoyed half as much as I know that I'm going to, all of the meetings that you've attended to in recent years, your friend and my friend can't get there. He's too busy, and he just couldn't possibly make all of them. But I'd like to give to you at this time a personal message just to you people to the Texas Conference. We'll now hear, and if you'll be quiet, it'll help the record. If you'll listen, you'll now hear from the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill W.
is just about as bad as anywhere. So that each and every one of you, my congratulations and my ardent hope that the next 12 months will be finest in the history of the whole state. One more word. I hear that Emmy is going to put on a good big pitch down here, and of this I am very glad for him and for you. Your kindness to him and to me is a memory that will always remain brilliant for so long as I live. Pardon the unfortunate deception and actually brought it on. In conclusion, may God bless you and Texas and Alcoholics Anonymous forever.
That was a recorded message from Bill, and I know, because I talked to him recently by phone, that he would have loved to have been here with the man that told him about his experience and how he was staying sober.